Today we are going to discuss an unusual figure in Jewish music, and that is Salamone di Rossi. And this is the way he preferred to write his name, Salamone, not Salomone, but Salamone di Rossi. And in Italy he was known as Salamone di Rossi Ebreo. Ebreo means the Jew. Salamone di Rossi was born in around, we don't have exact dates about him, around 1570, and lived perhaps all his life in Mantua, in Italy, and died, good question, when, we do not know exactly. When he died around 1628. Why that date? Because the last publication of his music was in 1628, and after that he simply disappeared. And we do not know what happened. In 1630, there was a big plague in northern Italy, and it is quite possible that he died in that plague, but we have no records, nothing. We do have records about him, a few records, in the court of Mantua. There, in Mantua, was the court of the family of Gonzaga, who were supporters of music. Gonzaga. They were supporters of music, and they very much appreciated Salamone Rossi because of his musical talents. He was employed by the Gonzaga family as a player of viola da gamba, and probably also as a singer. And he appeared in various functions of the court, in various musical theater pieces. Some of them he wrote himself. In the first opera, the first great opera of Monteverdi. Monteverdi also worked for the court of Gonzaga in Mantua, and he wrote a very important opera which is called Orfeo. And in that Orfeo, in the premiere of Orfeo, Rossi played the viola da gamba. He also did various other services. He wrote lots of music for the court, especially instrumental music and madrigals. But for us, the important thing is Jewish background and Jewish heritage. He was related to a family which had rabbis and important people, both from the musical point of view and from rabbinic point of view. His sister was called Madama Europa, and she appeared as a very famous singer in fashionable compositions of the time. He comes from a family that had Azaria di Rossi, Azaria min ha'adumim di Rossi, who was a very famous rabbi and a writer on many Jewish matters. So he was really versed in music, and versed also in Judaism. And therefore, it was quite natural that he would be encouraged to write a series of pieces for the synagogue. And he did that over many years under the guidance and, I should say, inspiration of Leone di Modena. Leone di Modena, or in Hebrew, his name is Yehuda Aryeh. Yehuda Aryeh, Leone di Modena, was a very unusual rabbi. As a matter of fact, one can think of him as the prototype of the progressive rabbi of our times. He was, of course, very well learned in halacha, and he was very knowledgeable in various aspects of Judaism. He was an excellent sermon giver, and people from all Italian parts of society would come to hear his sermons. That means Catholics would flock to hear his sermons in the synagogue. His sermons were based on halakha, but also on literature. He was an expert on Italian literature and Latin literature. In addition to that, he was a singer and a bass singer, and he also conducted a group of musicians who sang madrigals. He loved to play chess, and he permitted playing chess on Shabbat. He found halachic grounds to do that. He had all sorts of other things that are really amazing about a rabbi, and one of them is that he wrote a very interesting treatise against gambling. And why did he do so? Because he was a heavy gambler himself, and it was very difficult for him to get out of that. Now, this rabbi, Leone di Modena, encouraged Rossi to write new music for the synagogue, and to write it not really in the style of the old synagogue, but in a new style. The idea of Leone di Modena was as follows. He noticed that in some Tedeschi synagogues, in the Ashkenazi synagogues of German Jews that came to Italy, there was a custom of improvising polyphony. That is, that the chazan would be somehow accompanied by singers, and they would sing some primitive chords with him and accompany him in a very primitive way, an improvised way. And his idea was that if we can have such polyphony, why cannot it be organized and on a very high artistic level? And so he encouraged Rossi to write music on that artistic level. And he encouraged him to write music which is not necessarily choral music. In other words, Rossi's music is not meant to be a choir music. You see that the big compositions that we have, say by Lewandowski, you have a choir which really represents the congregation. But Modena's idea and Rossi's idea together was to write as if they would write to a polyphonic chazan. Imagine, says Modena, if you would have a chazan who had five voices and they all sang at the same time. How beautiful that would sound. And the ideal of that time was the madrigals in five voices, five-voice madrigals. That was the ideal. Not necessarily the church music, although to your ears it may sound like church music. Yeah. It is not church music. No, it's not church music. It's secular music of the time, the madrigals, canzonettas, and other pieces like that, that were fashionable at the time and were transformed into religious pieces by Rossi. So he wrote new pieces for the synagogue, ranging from 3 to 8 voices. And he collected all of them, and in 1622 he published a set which was called Hashirim Asher Lishlomo.
Lishlomo, that's himself.
Of course. Hashirim, where is Hashirim Asher Lishlomo come from?
Shir Hashirim
Asher Lishlomo. So that's a play on that. And it's Hashirim, the songs which are of Solomon. And Solomon is he. Hashirim Asher Lishlomo. And he wrote a very interesting preface to that, trying to justify the new innovation in the synagogue. And of course, when you have to justify things, that means there was an opposition to this kind of music. So the music was performed perhaps in Mantua, perhaps in Venice. We're not sure exactly under which circumstances this music was really performed in the synagogue.
Not even if it was a part of the service or more like a concert?
No. They were supposed to be part of the service.
Okay.
He had some psalms which were not part of the service, but in addition to the service or something very festive. He has one song for a wedding, which I'll talk about.
What is the difference between a choir and a 3 to 8 voices madrigal?
First of all, we're talking about individual singers.
Okay.
Each part has one singer, perhaps two singers, but not more than that. And it's more like chamber music playing, rather than a choir that would be composed of many singers. And so that is the idea. Today, Rossi's music is performed by choirs, but that was not his intention. So now, before I go on, I want you to see a documentary on Rossi, part of a documentary on Rossi, which will review some of the things that I said and go a little bit further than that, and you will be able to see a little bit of the surrounding, the Mantua and the Gonzaga place, and where everything was done except the synagogue, which does not exist anymore, and they now perform this at the synagogue in Venice sometimes, and sometimes not in a very authentic way. So he was the master of this instrument. He was the inventor of this kind of trio sonata music, in which two treble instruments, two soprano instruments, like a violin and a flute, or two violins, would play duets between themselves, and they would be accompanied by a group of other musicians, usually a harpsichord, cembalo, and a cello, and that the technique of that and everything else he developed and became very famous for that. But in addition to that, as I said, he composed many madrigals and theatrical pieces and all sorts of things. Only 33 pieces that he composed of the entire work of his are Jewish, and they were collected, all of them, in Hashirim Asher Lishlomo. Now, recently, a great professor in Jerusalem by the name of Don Haran published all the works of Rossi in 13 volumes. Volume 13 is the Jewish compositions, Hashirim Asher Lishlomo. So now, what we want to do is to listen to one of the simple pieces of the Hashirim, and it's written for three parts. It's a Baruchu. Can you try it again? Here's going. This musician goes with a guide to the cemetery of Mantua to try to locate the grave of Rossi. But unfortunately, there's no sign. We don't know where he's buried.
Ci possono essere delle tracce che possono far risalire a tombe di epoca molto lontana, come l'inizio del 600, dove presumibilmente si può dire che potesse essere sepolto Salomone Rossi.
Questo esattamente proprio non te lo so dire, però ti so dire che qui ci sono delle tombe molto antiche, il cimitero è uno dei più antichi d'Italia.
Mantua was a flourishing Jewish community, but it was enclosed in a ghetto, and only few people
today
would leave the ghetto.
Only 80 Jews remain in Mantua, the remnant of a large community that lived in the ghetto very close to the city center.
Questa qua era una casa di origine ebraica, e poi è stata donata alla Croce Rossa, e poi adesso ci hanno fatto degli appartamenti.
In his study of Rossi, Jeannie is assisted by Manuela Norsa, daughter of one of the oldest Jewish families of Mantua.
C'è una casa Norsa, l'antica casa dei Norsa, qua. Allora, questa è la casa del rabbino, è meravigliosa all'interno, comunque vieni dentro che è meravigliosa. Queste qui erano tutte case abitate dagli ebrei, adesso purtroppo qua no, dire che non è rimasto niente è poco.
The ghetto was quite narrow, so the Jews were forced to build up.
Il ghetto una volta era molto stretto, quindi si dovevano ingegnare a costruire in altezza, e sono i palazzi più antichi questi qua con il maggior numero di piani, che adesso stanno perché sono dell'epoca in cui Gonzaga erano in buonissimi rapporti con gli ebrei. Adesso ti faccio vedere un altro particolare molto 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 curioso. Mezzuzà. Sì, infatti se tu la guardi bene bene, qua c'è addirittura l'impronta della mezzuzà.
The ghetto gates were closed in the evening to keep Jews from entering the city.
In fondo, dove c'è quel cartello, alla fine di questa via il ghetto scompare. Alla fine di questa via il ghetto scompare.
The ghetto was situated behind the palace of the Jews in Gonzaga. Jews were allowed to leave the ghetto only under special circumstances. Salomone Rossi was one of the privileged few who had the right of free passage.
He was allowed not to wear a patch, a yellow patch, and he was allowed to move around freely.
The talented Rossi succeeded in both these worlds.
Dances that Rossi, Jews were masters of dancing, and many of them were teachers of dances and were considered very famous in Italian society. Most importantly, they dance teacher was Guglielmo, Ebreo.
Hall of Mirrors at the Ducal Palace, Monteverdi's Hall.
Guglielmo Ebreo wrote a book about dancing, which is until now considered the best book of Renaissance dancing, with detailed instructions.
Su Salomone Rossi si sa assai poco. Della vita di Salomone Rossi non abbiamo informazioni importanti, non abbiamo documenti. La sua vera vita è la serie delle sue opere, della produzione musicale che ha creato la città di Mantova tra la fine del 1800 e i primi anni del
17° secolo.
E la più importante ipotesi che si formula è che egli sia scomparso nel periodo tragico della peste che ha travolto l'Italia e l'Europa tutta nel 1630, perché dopo il 1630 non produce più e non scrive più musica. Quindi è verosimile che gli sia morto durante quell'anno terribile per tutti. La sua vita è divisa tra queste due condizioni.
What? No, that was
earlier. La corte di Gonzaga, che in quel momento era ancora molto splendida, anche se cominciava il declino.
Now you see a few dances
questa corte che appunto sarà spezzata
negli anni
1630,
and to which Rossi wrote music.
Dei antichi detti.
Christians maintained an ambivalent attitude towards the arts. They expressed themselves eagerly through painting, theater, poetry, and music, yet they still maintained certain reservations, believing the arts to be inferior to philosophy and rhetoric.
La danza che danziamo è danza storica. Esistono trattati, documenti, che sono la testimonianza delle danze che venivano eseguite nel XV e XVI secolo presso le corti italiane.
This is not by Rossi, this is a very old piece. This is not by Rossi. Actually it's an English piece.
Jews were prominent in the arts, assuming key positions as entertainers, singers, musicians, and especially dance teachers. One dancing master, Guglielmo Ebreo, wrote a book on the subject.
Ebrei non potevano possedere le proprietà esterne, non potevano possedere la terra, non potevano svolgere certe attività di carattere artigianale, quindi il loro servizio si indirizzava solo lungo sentieri particolari. Quello della danza è un servizio artistico che è in parallelo con la musica.
He says that the relationship of the Gonzaga family with the Jews were nice. Not always.
Actress and singer, known as Madame.
They had their share of persecution
portrayed in an opera by Monteverdi.
She was so pretty and sang so beautifully that there are hints of jealous tension between her and the Duke's mistress.
Vita di corte da un lato e vita della sinagoga dall'altro.
Now they are performing some of the Rossi pieces, the Jewish pieces, in the synagogue of Venice, in the big squalor. Well, of course, at the time, only male singers could perform. This is a modern performance with female singers. Only males with falsetto, with the countertenor voices, could perform. Here's the bajo. You have it in the music. Now, in the synagogue, they performed it without instruments. Here they, for the concert sake.
Nei tempi moderni, qui in sinagoga a Mantova, si cantano i salmi messi in musica da Salomone Rossi, quindi a distanza di 400, più di 400 anni, la prima volta che viene ripresa questa musica a Mantova. Questo è un giorno molto significativo anche per la cultura mantovana e anche per la cultura ebraica e per la musica.
Until Rossi's time, synagogue music in Europe was chanted without accompaniment and was very different from the stylized music that had developed in the church. Salomone Rossi was the first musician to introduce choral music into the synagogue.
Now it's not choral music. That was not the idea.
Ricavare melodie ebraiche colte dalla bocca dei cantori e poi elaborate in forma colta, in forma scritta, in forma colta.
That's the problem with documentaries, they can't hear the music.
O i soprani naturali, che erano le persone maschili, di sesso maschile, non cattato, che però avevano un registro di soprano.
Now, contrary to Catholic practice, that when they have the boys castrated in order to preserve the voices, this was, even the church did not like it very much, but they did it. In Jewish life, it was never even a question. So the singers were contratenors, people who developed special falsetto voices to sing.
Salomone Rossi composed 33 choral works for the synagogue. In 1623, encouraged by Rabbi Leon Modena, he published them in Venice under the title The Songs of Solomon. To ward off adverse criticism, Rossi prefaced the book with the written approval of Rabbi Modena and other noted religious authorities. Rabbi Modena was a colorful and multifaceted personality, an inventive and talented man who wrote books on a wide variety of subjects. A renowned preacher, his sermons at the Great Synagogue of Venice, based on the laws of rhetoric, were even attended by Christian princes and counts.
La vita di Leon da Modena chiaramente seguì questi due binari. Qui dicono che amasse la bella vita, amasse il gioco, amasse la letteratura, la poesia ebraica e anche non ebraica. Leon da Modena era un personaggio di quel tempo, un personaggio di quel tempo che per quanto siamo attaccato alle tradizioni, alla
he was the greatest rabbi of Venice of that time.
Vivere in questa Venezia illuminata, in questa Venezia che offriva ricchezze incredibili, questa è la corte del Midrash Leon da Modena. Come la gente poteva uscire d'estate, se faceva caldo, e avere un po' di refrigerio, poteva anche chiacchierare con i vicini di casa, se aveva voglia.
Besides teaching in a Beit Midrash, a religious school, Leon Modena also wrote poems and plays. He played instruments, conducted a choir, and taught music. He served as director of the Academy of Music, founded by a group of Jewish music lovers in the Venice ghetto.
This is another Rossi piece, which is called Elohim Ashiveinu, for 5 parts. And this is faithful to the way they did it at the time.
The Jews were influenced by Italian Renaissance aesthetics and had no qualms about asking church architects to plan elegant synagogues for them.
This is the Grand Scuola in Venice, the big synagogue.
Today, virtually no Jews are left, and the ghetto has an entirely different character.
Il ghetto è una piazza molto grande, molto larga, e allora approfittano dello spazio per fare questo festival.
This is how the ghetto looks today. Okay, we can stop here. You know, documentaries are always mixed blessings when it comes to music, and they want to show things rather than to hear things. So, can we hear it? Number four.
Isn't this number? This is number. I guess five. Yes.
There's a set of CDs.
Yeah.
Not this one. Where's the... Can you follow the music?
Baruch Hu.
Can you start again, please? In the synagogue today. Now, you can see that what he imagined here is not a choir. Choirs never really sing Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu is the part of the Chazan, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's not a choir. It's as if you have here a Chazan with 3 heads, mm-hmm. singing 3 parts. That was the idea. And you see that there is a second part, which is Baruch Adonai Amevorach Le'olam Vahen Le'olam Vahen Le'olam Vahen. Now you would imagine that this is the response of the congregation. It is not. It is not the response of the congregation. It is the Chazan singing after the congregation has responded.
Okay. How does the congregation respond?
That is the greatest thrill. That is the greatest. What the congregation says response is here in the double line. You see the double line there in the middle? There is a double line?
Yeah,
that's the congregational response. What do you do with it? That's a good question. When Don Haran published his edition of the Rossi, we talked a lot about how the publication should look and things like that. And I suggested to him that he should write a part for the Kahal, as it was done in Venice in those days. We don't know exactly how it was done in Venice or in Mantua in those days, but we have some traditions, some Italian traditions, of how you do Baruch Adonai HaMoach L'Olam Vaed, and it's very simple. So he refused. He decided after many deliberations that he should not intervene. Whatever Rossi wrote, he wrote, and whatever it was not written, we should not read it. But when it's performed, then something like after then the congregation should say something like Baruch Adonai HaMevorach Le'olam Vaed. This is similar to Italian practice, and then the three head Chazan answers with Baruch Adonai HaMevorach, as it is written here.
You get the full thing. You will get the full set later to learn for next time.
What I wanted to suggest is, and I suggested it to David already, that when we have the Onik Shabbat, that we should do it this way. We'll all be the Chazan in three parts. Needs to work a little bit. That can be done. It's a beautiful little composition.
Did he write also? When he was standing, the
choir was gone. He sang this part. Oh, yes? Also, some of you know it, really.
Yes.
So that's very good. Now, you asked about publications of the... I can pass it around. This is... There are two volumes of this, two records. It's called just the Songs of Solomon, and it's by New York Baroque, Eric Milne's conductor. It was published by Pro Gloria Musica.
Yeah, and we'd like to have this back.
I can pass it around.
Did he also write for these special occasions? Did he have a Baroque for Hoshana for?
He had some of the prayers are intended for, like for instance, Eftachnas Fatai was intended for either Simchat Torah or Shavuot. Yeah, and he has a beautiful composition for a wedding, in which there are eight voices singing, and four of them sing echoes at the end of sentences to the main choir. So the choir sings a verse, and then the last word is, for instance, Derech Gever La'alma. Alma is a young maiden in Hebrew, but then the echo is Italian, Alma. Mm. Alma, oh my love, my soul. So it's a play on words. Like that. It's beautifully done. Unfortunately, I don't have
this composition is for an ordinary Shabbos Shacharit or whatever?
Yes, there was for an every Shabbat Shacharit, yeah. We don't know exactly what he meant it for which service, but apparently this was... Unfortunately, Rossi's compositions were short-lived. After 1630, you don't hear about his compositions anymore. His compositions were published in 1622, or actually 2023, that year. It was published in a format which is part books. That means he did not publish a full score of them. Only the parts exist. So there is a soprano part, an alto part, a tenor part, etc. And these are written in Renaissance script, that is, the notation is like this. It's written in Renaissance script. It goes left to right. The music goes left to right. But the text goes right to left in every word. So Baruch Hu would be written this way, not under the note, not under the each syllable, but as one word, Baruch Hu. And one of the greatest headaches of the editors is how to divide the syllables and how to really sing it. So there are various versions of that, how you sing that Baruch Hu. Now, these prints somehow, they were printed in many copies, but most of the copies disappeared. And in the 19th century, Naumburg, who was in Paris, discovered through the Rothschilds of Paris a set of parts, and he published the music for the first time in a modern publication. And in this modern publication, he changed a few things for Rossi because of the taste of the 19th century. So, could we hear the Kaddish that we had before? That's it. Notice that the rhythm. Notice it's very similar to the Galia that we saw, the dance forms. And it's the words Yid Gadal Veit Kadash Shemei Rahaba. Could you imagine a Kaddish being sung in that kind of melody? So, but that was accepted at that time. But in the 19th century, when Naumburg published that set of song, he was probably scandalized by it, and therefore he changed it to Adon Olam. Adon Olam Asher Malach Beterem Kol Yetzir Nivra. So he changed it to Adon Olam, and in many synagogues, in Reform synagogues in Europe and in the United States, they sang this as Adon Olam, and nobody knew that it was meant to be the Kaddish. Now, of course, the newest publications restored that to the Kaddish, and it would be nice if one day we could sing it as well. It's a very beautiful composition, and it's written in the style of these dances of the time. So whoever thinks that Rossi really wrote church music, no, far from it. He wrote secular music, and he made the secular music fit the Hebrew text. So after Rossi's death, all of these things was totally forgotten. At the end of the 17th century, people came to this kind of music, to the Baroque music actually, anew. They discovered that anew. And many synagogues in northern Italy started to use Baroque music for special occasion, not for the services, but for special occasions, like inauguration of Sefer Torah, or inauguration, inauguration of a synagogue. And they wrote cantatas in the Italian style. And that style moved to Amsterdam. To this Portuguese synagogue. To the Portuguese synagogue. Yeah. How so? Because of one composer. His name was Giovanni Cristiano Lidarti. Giovanni Cristiano Lidarti, who was obviously not Jewish, moved from Venice to Amsterdam, and he was requested, already in Venice he wrote for the Jewish synagogue, he wrote one, a cantata for Hoshana Rabbah and some other occasions. And he was requested by the Jewish community of Amsterdam, the Portuguese community, to write various pieces for the synagogue. And he wrote beautiful pieces. The Kolan Shammai. Sometimes in some of the weekends here, you heard the Kolan Shammai, but Kol HaNeshama, Kol HaNeshama, it's a beautiful cantata, and some of his cantatas were specifically written for Simchat Torah, because Simchat Torah was a great celebration in the Portuguese synagogue. Until now, you can see the sofas. There are two big sofas in the front, near the Aron Kodesh of the Esnocha, and they were meant to be used once a year, really. On one of the sofas, the Chatan Torah was seated with a Torah scroll, and on the other one, the Chatan Bereshit would be seated on the other scroll. And they would have tremendous celebrations at the end of Simchat Torah, Motzai Simchat Torah, with lots of music and with a processional with lots of lights and fire and so on through Amsterdam of that time. So for that, Lidarti wrote also music. So in a way, somehow the heritage of writing non-Jewish music to Jewish services was preserved by Lidarti and other people like him. But it was not the style of Rossi anymore, but it was a later kind of Baroque style.